values, and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, continuing our discussion about the decision yesterday, three Republicans joining the Democrats and repealing a law that was goes back to 1864, but it was recertified in the 70s. Joining us in studio is the Arizona Speaker of the House, Ben Thoma. First of all, Mr. Speaker, thanks for doing this.
Oh, thank you for the invite. Appreciate it.
I know it's been a crazy 24 hours. Did you see this coming? Did you know ahead of this vote this is probably how it was going to go? Or were you surprised by this when it happened?
I mean, it's hard not to see it coming to some extent, just because it had been attempted twice before. As you remember, this happened the week or the day right after the decision, and then, of course, last week as well, and then this week. So we knew it was probably going to happen. I will be honest, I didn't know if the votes were there yesterday. And so to some extent, it was a little bit of a surprise, but I can't say that it was entirely a surprise.
I want to read just one small piece of your statement that you put out yesterday. We should not have rushed this bill through the legislative process. The pre-Roe law has been on the books for decades and was readopted in 1977 by Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature and signed by Democrat Governor Raul Castro. Talk about, in your mind, the significance of that and the rushing to judgment here.
Well, first of all, part of the problem here is a misunderstanding of process. Some people think that if we would have done it right away, that somehow this would have become effective right away. And these are, of course, people that are already sort of set in their ways and have decided the issue of abortion already. But the truth of the matter is, it doesn't matter if we passed it 2 weeks ago or if we did this action a month from now. What matters is when the session ends, because nothing that we pass will become effective until 90 days after the session is completed. And at this point, we don't have a budget yet. We don't have a few, you know, other things that are absolutely necessary before we can end the session. And so rushing doesn't actually do anything other than presumably make some people feel better.
So what happens next? Now, I know the Senate has to vote on it, but let's go. If the steps go through, the Senate passes it, the governor signs it, we revert back to the 2022 law of 15 weeks. Is that what happens?
That is correct. Absolutely. Yep.
And so is that sufficient in your mind to offset what the voters will have in front of them in November, which many pro-life, as I am, people have said, opens the door to interpretation in much later terms in pregnancies and much more open door for abortions?
Well, I truly hope so, because that initiative, as I think you and I agree on this, is pretty much unconscionable. I don't see how anybody can really defend it. In theory, it's a 24-week, but in practice, because of the exceptions and because of the very, very broad nature in which it is written, it would effectively allow abortions to the moment of birth. And that is cruel and barbaric, and we absolutely should have no place for that in our society.
And, you know, what's interesting is in the referendum, there is a referendum, Arizona's for Abortion Access is what this act is called. They are saying that they just want to enshrine and guarantee access to care. And they even say in that, as they've written it, it says until viability. But who determines viability of pregnancy? And that's the question I have about the way it's written.
Well, sure. I mean, in theory, at least from a scientific standpoint, as I understand things now, the 24 weeks would be the number. But again, then if that was the case, then why not just say that is it, period, as opposed to what they've actually done, which is leave it open, completely open-ended, to your healthcare professional making this decision. And how do you define healthcare professional? Is it a Planned Parenthood employee that is now the healthcare professional that decides because they're fully for abortion and fully for abortion all the way to the moment of birth that, you know what? You're due tomorrow, but that's okay because you can have an abortion today because I think that's warranted for the health of the mother or something to that effect. Again, it's so open-ended. I think it's on purpose, and I think it's indefensible.
So then let's talk about the reasons why a lot of the Republicans that voted yes on this in fear of this passing if something wasn't done. Will the Republican caucus and the Republican led legislature, will you try to get a referendum written that will be on the ballot to offset this one that would limit it to the 15 weeks that is a lot more specific in restrictions to give voters an option? Or do you believe reverting back to this 15 weeks in the legislation that's going to come online is sufficient?
So first of all, assuming that the Senate does pass this next week or sometime after, then the law of the land would be 15 weeks. At that point, I just simply don't see how they can make the point in good faith that that abortion is not available in Arizona, because it definitely would be up to that point. Again, if you're looking for the extreme version that the Democrats want, then I can see why they're going to try to make that point. But I hope, and of course, I think we all need to do everything we can to ensure that the public actually knows what their version is. Now, going back to a couple really quick points I wanted to make. First of all, I know it's been couched as the Democrats have done this with the help of Republicans. It's actually the other way around. Let's be very clear here. There's a couple of Republicans that have done this with the help of the Democrats. That is technically what happened. That is actually what happened, and that is what was attempted up until this point. And you know, we can agree to disagree with some of our colleagues. I know you had one of my colleagues, Tim Dunn, on before, just a few minutes before I got here, and I have the utmost respect for him. He's a decent human being, and I believe that he did this because he really felt that this was the way to save more babies, as he said. I personally disagree, and hence my comment about being disappointed. But I can still, you know, we're human beings. It's okay for us to disagree and still agree on the vast majority of things. And what we can agree on is that this initiative has to be stopped.
And so I don't know if this is going to be too personal of a question. I'm trying to keep this, but this is such a personal issue. Is there a struggle for people? I am adamantly pro-life like you are. But the struggle of looking at what's coming down the road and seems to be inevitable with this piece of this initiative that they're trying to get on the ballot, that if you don't do something that's much better than that, you're going to end up with that. So is there a struggle with thinking about allowing time 15 weeks, 24 weeks when you are adamantly pro-life, or do you realize you are fighting an uphill battle and you just got to do the best you can?
It would be disingenuous for me to say that it isn't a struggle. Of course, it's a struggle. For at the end of the day, what motivates us, that us individuals that are pro-life, is to save as many lives as possible. And as such, making the pragmatic argument, right, that if the voters of Arizona are faced with zero or this initiative, which is awful, they will probably choose, or they're more likely to choose this. But again, now we're having a different conversation. What if they're choosing between abortion up to 15 weeks and this initiative, which is awful, which effectively opens the door all the way to the end, then it is my hope that the vast majority will choose to say, you know what, we have enough. Theirs, in fact, does go too far, and we need to ensure that doesn't happen. It's a deeply personal decision for legislators. I will take a little bit of offense to some categorizations that have said that have questioned our motivations and constantly bring up the fact that this is political. It's not political. It's not just political, but there are political implications, of course, and it's fair for you guys to debate that and for us to talk about it, but it's deeply personal as well. And there's nothing like abortion. There's no other issue that's quite so clearly pits the duties and the rights of an individual or a potential individual that is a baby and the rights of the mother to her own body. And so where do you land? Where is the duty of the state to protect one or the other or both? Which one wins? I mean, this thing is very complicated. I think it's unfair to characterize it as just political or just ethical. It's really everything.
Speaker of the House Ben Thoma is joining us in studio. This being done, has this been a distraction in your mind to some of the other important business or the things that need to be done in the legislature? And if the answer is yes, what is next on the agenda for you moving forward with this session to get this wrapped up?
I wouldn't necessarily use the word distraction only because this issue is important in and of itself. However, it has put a pause on some of the other discussions. The truth of the matter is we still have to get a budget together. We are finally making substantive moves in that department. We're having meetings with the governor's office on this and hope to get there at some point soon. In addition to that, you know, we still have other issues we're looking at. For example, there's some discussion about ballot referrals on some of the border issues that we need to really figure out, because what's happening there is only getting worse every day, and some on the economy as well. So all that's still in the works, and I would expect that we get right back to it.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the time here in studio with us. It's always great when you drop in, and I hope you'll come back more often.
Looking forward to it.
All right, that's Speaker of the House Ben Thoma that is joining us for a few moments. We're going to talk about the economy and economic growth next.
One, two, three!
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right. We have got so many conversations to be had today, and centered around the election. What would you call them? Fake electors, as they're being called. I'm not using that word. That's just the identifier everybody's using. But the accusation of fake electors, we're going to talk a lot more about that this morning. Of course, this issue of abortion and what the House did yesterday and what the Senate might do this week or next week. So all of that's still going to be a part of the conversation. But U.S. economic growth slows to 1.6%, much, much, much lower than the anticipated 2.4%. So when you look at this slowing in growth and the inflation remained very high, people are beginning, experts are getting very concerned. U.S. economic growth slows down massively is one of the headlines. Shocking number of full-time jobs lost in the past 5 months as people in the business world are looking deeper into the numbers. And then we're talking about tax cuts expiring. That's just what I have in front of me. I put these all together for a number of reasons. The government continues to grow and grow and grow. And I hope that you'll look at this, not just from my political perspective or listening to me, but weigh on it yourself. Look at it yourself. The government continues, I'm talking about the federal government, continues to rack up massive amounts of debt, and they continue to grow. Now, the president of the United States is going to try to sell to the American people that what we have to do is get rid of the tax cuts that were passed during the Trump administration by reversing those tax cuts. Many of you who work in small businesses will be affected, because small business owners will be affected by this as well. It is not just the and I hate saying this, because to say it's not just the very rich among us. The very rich among us deserve to be treated fairly as well. They shouldn't be the whipping boys of the of an administration or a political ideology. Wealthy people have the right to be treated fairly with taxation like everyone else. We have got to start turning a critical eye in the other direction. We are watching government jobs increase immensely in the last few years and not slow down while they are getting deeper and deeper in debt. If you are watching, and I want you to be fair, if you were watching a company, if you had money invested in a company independently or through your 401k or an investment portfolio or someone that does your investments, if you were watching this company and you kept reading these news stories about this company that is running at massive deficits, that there's conversations about their credit rating and people are concerned about all this insurmountable, unsustainable path. That's what's been used about the debts that the American government is racking up. It's on an unsustainable path. If you kept hearing that about a company that you were watching or invested in, and then you were reading stories, they continue to hire people. They continue to add more people to their payroll. They continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger while racking up more and more debts. Would you or would you not pull your money out or have serious concerns about investing in that company? Intellectually, we all know that that's wrong. The American economy slows to 1.6% and inflation is remaining high. That is the opposite of what the administration told us is going to happen. The accountability is real. And you know, there are policies that affect this one way or the other. It is not 100%. I have never said 100% of the problems that have happened are lay at the feet of this administration or its policies. They are correct when they say some of it was influenced when it came to gas and oil prices because of what was going on with Russia and Ukraine. That's true. There is an effect there. No doubt about it. Food prices, because of how much wheat is grown in that region, also affected. Absolutely. But I had the energy secretary, Granholm, on this show a year ago, and she was touring Arizona, and I think it had to do with coal plants and some other things. And I asked her about these accusations that everything that's going bad in our economy is the fault of the Russians, and it's the fault of Ukraine, and it's the fault of this and that. And I said, is there any responsibility in the policy of this president that's causing inflation? And she said, no, absolutely not. And that's just not true either. The government can control what the government can control. Your policies control. I said a long time ago, the president of the United States, if Joe Biden, and I'm not a Biden supporter, I didn't vote for him, and I'm not voting for him again, but he would have had my respect, and I would have acknowledged he did the right thing because I try to be fair. If Joe Biden, President Biden, had said to the American people, I believe in the Green New Deal. I believe that climate change is the number one problem that the world is facing, and the U.S. is a leader on all this. If I heard him say those words, I believe this to be true. But we have record high fuel prices. Heating oil prices are going through the roof. Diesel prices are hammering businesses. Gas prices are hammering individuals and businesses. And until we can do something to get rid of the elements that we have no control over, until the war between Russia and Ukraine changes, until we can lower food prices and wheat production and supply chain issues because of COVID, until those things are rectified, we're going to suspend the Green New Deal. We're going to suspend my green policies that are contributing to this, so that the prices go down at least somewhat for the American people. And as soon as the economy is righted, as soon as inflation is down, we're going to go back. I'm promising you now, we're going back to my plans. I wouldn't have agreed with his plans, but at least he would have seen there are things that you can do to lower prices instead of blaming everybody else for the problems that exist. Now the chickens are coming home to roost. The economy is at least in the first quarter, is coming to a screeching halt. And we are now seeing inflation remain very high. How are they going to defend this? How are they going to talk about this being an issue that's not their fault? In a moment, we're going to go back to the topic of fake electors. We're going to have a conversation with a lawyer about all of this coming up here. Or that's going to happen in the 10 o'clock hour. We're going to go back to the fake electors and give you an update on what's happened if you don't know what it is. We'll do that in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, we are giving you an opportunity to enter to win Suns playoff tickets all week long here on KTAR. 7 a.m. on Arizona's Morning News. We'll do it on this show in the 11 a.m. hour. Not going to tell you exactly when, but you'll have a chance. We'll give you a code word. You text that code word to 411-923, and you have a shot at winning Suns playoff tickets. Also, they'll do it in the 3 and the 5 p.m. hours in the afternoon shows. Make sure you're listening today in the 11 o'clock hour. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays has made the announcement. There is indictments of 18 people, 11 what they are calling fake electors, and 7 other people that I imagine those names will be coming out soon, but they were redacted until those people had been served officially with those indictments. Mays took to X to post a video claiming that the 18 defendants within the indictment, along with the other unindicted co-conspirators, allegedly attempted to undermine the will of the state voters during the 2020 election. There's a lot of questions here that I don't have answers to, but it certainly made me think about a lot of these things. I want you to hear some of this coming from the Attorney General. This is her talking about the investigation taking such a long time.
Let me start by thanking everyone for your patience as we conducted a thorough and professional investigation over the past 13 months into the fake elector scheme in our state. I understand for some of you today didn't come fast enough.
And for other people, it should never have happened. And that's the other part of this. The Attorney General, and I'm saying this without sarcasm because I have the utmost respect for her. But the Attorney General on this show earlier this month on the 11th of April was on this show saying that her office would not waste any time in investigating or prosecuting cases involving abortions because they have bigger things to do. She's talking about water rights and the border and a lot of other things that are important in her office. So how does something that didn't affect the election in 2020, which it didn't, Joe Biden won the election, Joe Biden was certified as president of the United States, and Joe Biden won the electoral votes from the state of Arizona. So it didn't affect the election. I'm not defending what was done. I'm not defending it at all. Not defending any of it. I'm saying it was 4 years ago, or almost 4 years ago, well over three, and it didn't have a bearing on the election in the end. why the investigation that took this long and the resources. I'm only saying that in fairness, and I'm asking the question in fairness, because one of the reasons in defending the decision not to enforce abortion laws is I'm not wasting time and resources. I have important things to do. How does this rise to the level of that importance? It's a fair question. It is a fair question. And in fairness, I reached out to the Attorney General herself, and I asked her a couple of times to be on the show. And I understand not getting a response. She's probably getting requests from all over the country. But it's not as if I'm, you know, because we are going to have on the show in the next hour, the attorney for Senator Jake Hoffman, who was one of the people that had been indicted, to talk about the defense and how the senator has made an emphatic statement saying he's not guilty of any crime. I wanted you to know that I am making sure that we're reaching out, trying to get both sides of the story on. So since the Attorney General isn't able to answer these questions, I'm laying them out for you, because I asked her on the show back on the 11th when it came to abortion, are you concerned about not living up to your oath by picking and choosing what laws you enforce and what laws you don't? And she talked about having the discretion. We have a discretion, and they always have. An attorney general has the discretion. In this case, she believed it warranted a long-term investigation and indictments. So she talks about why this case was brought.
We're here because justice demands an answer to the efforts that the defendants and other unindicted co-conspirators allegedly took to undermine the will of Arizona's voters during the 2020 presidential election.
So that's the question for me is, in this, what is the right thing? I don't want people that break the law to go without paying for breaking the law. But if you are saying that enforcing one set of laws is not on your priority list, why is this on your priority list? It happened before you were the attorney general. You were not the attorney general at the time. That attorney general didn't do it, which she also addressed saying at the time back in 2022 when she was running for the office that the attorney general abdicated his job and did a political thing by not indicting people. So that's the question. Is this politically motivated? Now, it doesn't matter if it is. Let me be honest with you. If you are someone that's broken the law, just to be fair, if you break the law and there is somebody in the opposite political party that indicts you for that crime and uses it to their political advantage, that's your fault. But it is a fair question. If this were, the reverse is fair. If these were Democrats, would they have leveled the charges? Would the investigation have taken place if it were Democrats that did it? That's a fair question. In the world we live in today, it's a fair question. But they are being charged. A grand jury has charged 11 Arizona people for falsely certifying that Donald Trump won the election in 2020. The names of the seven Trump allies were redacted because they haven't yet been handed the charges. Arizonans now face charges including powerful and influential GOP figures, a former Republican Party Arizona chair, Republican National Committeeman, executive at Turning Point USA and its political arm, two sitting state senators, one of whom retains immense political power in the Arizona Capitol. That is speaking of Jake Hoffman from Queen Creek. We have a statement here. I want to read this to you if I can find it. This is a statement from Senator Hoffman. Now, we are going to speak with Senator Hoffman's attorney in the next hour. Harmeet Dhillon, the managing partner of the Dhillon Law Group, is going to talk with us in the next hour about the senator's position on this. But he says before an investigation had ever been conducted with no evidence, Chris Mays declared that she believed electors such as myself were guilty of a crime and that it was her job to get Biden reelected and that she would control the timing of the indictment. So we have here in front of us, I have a tweet from Chris Mays, the attorney general. This was back in 2022, I believe. She said, another glaring example of Brnovich abdicating his duties. I would have immediately investigated the fake electors as attorney general. There is no mystery about what happened here. The fake electors videotaped their crime for all to see. Arizona needs a lawyer for the people. So this is part of what the statement from Senator Hoffman. Now, unsurprisingly, we see that she has weaponized the once respected attorney general's office to deliver an indictment of her Republican political opponents years after the events at issue, long after Democrat prosecutors made their decision, and right before Arizona's primary election. Let me be unequivocal. I am innocent of any crime. I will vigorously defend myself, and I look forward to the day when I am vindicated of this naked political persecution by the judicial process. So we are going to talk with his lawyer in the next hour to find out what that prosecution or persecution is, and if in fact they don't believe they broke any law, what are they being charged with, and why are they not guilty of a crime? I think it's a conversation that Arizona needs to hear. We want to hear all sides of this conversation. We are going to pursue all sides of this conversation. Coming up in a moment, our weekly conversation with Luke Lipinski, as we talk with him about the D-backs, but we've got to talk Cardinals draft. It's our opportunity to talk sports next.
Mike talks Diamondbacks baseball. D-backs home run with Broomhead on KTAR News 92.3 and the KTAR News app.
All right. I think we should have opened this segment with Danger Zone from the movie Top Gun, because and maybe I shouldn't say that because that was about Navy pilots. Oh, you are dressed like a naval aviator.
It's supposed to be. Go ahead.
Okay. You're dressed like Pete Mitchell.
It's a long running joke on our show that Wolf and myself have gotten too far into the danger zone that the Cardinals should draft Marvin Harrison Jr. Aaron, our producer, started playing Danger Zone on the show a lot, like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And her and I decided on draft day, I'll wear this, because she had one. She went out and got it so I could wear it. And Wolf still hasn't seen me actually yet.
Aren't we a little worried that she knew where to get a Pete Maverick
she knows
Mitchell
where to
flight
get
suit?
Well, this is her dad's Halloween costume from
oh,
1 year.
Okay.
Yeah. She didn't like
I
have
was
it
little,
on speed.
A little concerned. So that makes a little bit of
a
sense.
A little bit. That's as much sense as you're gonna get out of me on
I
this.
I didn't really say anything, but I saw you walking around and you're wearing a flight suit.
Yeah.
People turn on your cameras. We have cameras in the studio now.
Gotten some weird looks.
Luke Lipinski.
You want the sunglasses
actually,
on too? I feel like I got to do the whole show like this now.
And the name tag says Pete Mitchell.
Well, that's gotta be awesome. Authentic.
That's amazing. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's get into this. Let's get into the draft.
Okay.
Are they going to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or are they going to trade down or maybe both and end up getting him?
I don't think they can trade down and still get him. I think they can trade down and get one of those top three receivers, whether it's him, Rome Odunze, or Malik Nabers. It's tough to tell, you know, with Monty Austin Ford. If he has Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers anywhere near Marvin Harrison Jr. on his draft board, I think they will trade down and find a way to still get that other guy. But, man, everything we hear from everybody is that not only is Marvin Harrison Jr. the best receiver prospect since, like, Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, but that the Cardinals should just sprint to the podium when it's their turn to make the pick.
And that's the other part of it, because the Cardinals have more picks in this draft than any other team, so it's not as if they're not going to be able to fill needs.
Yeah.
So that's another. Isn't that another deciding factor? It's not like you're limited on your picks in a way.
To me, and you're one of the few people I've heard bring it up to me, that's one of the biggest things is sometimes people look and say it's irresponsible to take a receiver that high, but they desperately need a receiver and they have five other picks in the top 90 aside from this pick. And Marvin Harrison Jr., I know nobody's can't miss, but he's about as close to can't miss as you're going to get. And I mean, we all know who his dad was. He's a Hall of Fame receiver, too.
And to hear him speak, which I don't know, I guess people can have a public persona different than others. He is such a confident young man, but respectful. He seems to have every attitude you'd want in a young person. And we know with wide receivers, that isn't always the case with wide receivers. They're known to be a little out there sometimes.
Yes, not always a given that you're going to get that. You know, it's going to be interesting because his pre-draft process was a little bit different. His dad was kind of coaching him, you don't need to do this at the combine, you don't need to do that. And I understand how that might raise a red flag for some people, but you do have to remember his dad is a Hall of Famer at that exact position too. So,
and a great coach for him.
Yeah. And he's not going to get surprised by anything that the NFL lifestyle throws at him as a rookie because of who his dad is and because he grew up around the game. I mean, that is similar to Larry Fitzgerald. I don't like comparing anybody to Fitz that hasn't done it, but Fitz grew up around the NFL too.
Yeah, so let's, I know we're bouncing around, but I do want to go to the D-backs because this segment is supposed to be about the D-backs. But in the last couple of weeks, we got to talk about these other things.
Crazy, yeah.
Let's, I have to ask you just one question. The D-backs don't seem to be as efficient or playing as well without the mistakes as they did last season. So you've got a young team that seems 1 year's growth, 1 year maturity, and yet they seem to have taken a step back, at least early in the season, in mistakes and things on the field. Is that something to be concerned about, or is it a glitch? What is this?
I think Mike Hazen was on our show last week, and I thought he answered one of our questions pretty well. It wasn't quite this, but it applies. He was like, look, the injuries, we can't use them as an excuse. Every team has injuries. But in his position as a GM, he has to be aware of them as part of the reality. Alec Thomas is one of the best fielders in baseball. He's been out pretty much all year. They've had a lot of guys injured, but they are on pace for... They had 56 errors last year, which was one of the best in baseball history. They're on pace for like 128 right now.
Yeah.
So that's a significant difference. That's not one guy.
Right. Yeah. So is this something that needs to be addressed by the coaching staff? Are they just being lazy with things? Or are they victims because of injuries and some people are playing where they're not used to playing or playing in ways they're not used to playing?
I think I think the injuries are the biggest part of it, but it's still maybe it's them trying to meet these expectations. They have those expectations last year. You know what I mean? So I think it's probably more than one thing, but the injuries would be at the top of the list.
All right. Are the Phoenix Suns getting bounced in round one?
Boy, it doesn't look good, does it?
It doesn't.
I would just love to see them fight back and win these games at home, make this a series, show everybody that fight that a lot of Suns fans have sort of questioned whether or not it's there this season. If they just bow out casually in like four or five games, that's a really bad look for a team where they spend a lot of money on this team.
And again, I'm such a casual fan, but to watch any team in the playoffs seem like their intensity drops off late in the game,
yeah.
That's the part of it to me, is the playoffs are about intensity, fight until the very end. Some of the games we've already watched in this first round that have turned out with huge comebacks. Look at the Nuggets and things like that.
Yeah.
Look what Miami did and coming back and winning in Boston. That's the stuff you're looking for in a playoff series, is we're going to fight tooth and nail. And I don't know that we've seen that kind of fight.
We haven't really seen that from them all season. We've seen where they have like a bad game and the next game they respond and maybe they rattle off three or four wins. We've seen that sort of resiliency, but just in game, it would be great to see them like down by 10 in the fourth and come back and win tomorrow, because that characteristic just hasn't been there.
Is this an issue where, and everybody always blames the coach, but you have to ask the question, is this where maybe the coaching matchup didn't match with the team? Are they going to, is Vogel in trouble?
If they go out in the first round and like quickly in like four or five games, I think he is, because I don't know what else you can really change. I don't think it's necessarily his fault or, any more his fault than anybody else's. I think it's the way you said it. Maybe it wasn't the best match.
Yeah.
He and his coaching staff made huge adjustments from game one to game two that worked. They just still didn't win.
Always appreciate it there, Maverick. I appreciate the time.
I appreciate you keeping a straight face while I'm dressed like this.
No, I love this. I love it very much. Thanks, Luke.
All right, thanks.
That's Luke Lipinski. Coming up, we are going to talk more about the AZ ballot breakdown.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.